Welcome back to the Branding Blog Podcast. I'm Dave Young, and I've got a really, I think, exciting podcast this week. I'm going to be talking to Dennis Collins, who a dear friend who just retired from like the biggest radio media conglomerate group in Miami. Oh, he's laughing already.
Oh, man, I like that.
Shh, Dennis, I haven't even introduced you yet.
Don't stop.
Yeah, this is the part of the podcast where I kind of, you know, set the stage, and then I'll bring you out, okay?
Okay.
So you're still technically in the green room.
I'll be quiet.
All right. So anyway, we're going to be talking to Dennis Collins, and we're going to find out, I think he's been retired all of about 2 weeks now, and we're going to find out what retirement is like for somebody that worked a long, hard career in the broadcast industry. And we're also going to get Dennis's take on, I don't know, you know, some insider stuff in broadcasting, and certainly some of his insight into what small businesses over the years that he's seen throughout his career, the kind of advice that they just fail to take almost every time. So that's really what I'm interested. Before we get started, though, I wanted to mention that ShortcutBlogging.com is the sponsor of the Branding Blog Podcast. And I talked about it last week, interviewed Paul Boomer at length, and we probably went way too long talking about shortcut blogging, because what we went way too long talking about is all the reasons that you ought to be blogging, all the reasons that you're not blogging, and how ShortcutBlogging.com can help. And so in a nutshell, ShortcutBlogging.com, for people that have serious resistance to blogging, even though they know they should do it, we're taking the biggest shortcut you can take in blogging, and that's for you. We're not taking the shortcut, but you are. Instead of staring at a blank computer screen, instead of podcasting by just staring at a microphone and going, gosh, why can't I think of something to say? We're going to hook up our customers. If you're a customer of Shortcut Blogging, we're going to hook you up with a professional radio announcer who's going to interview you in one recording session every month, enough 10-minute segments to last an entire month. So it may be 4 1 month and 5 another month. But your only commitment is to sit down once a month and sit through 4 or 5 interviews about the topics that you're an expert on, that you already know everything about. And then we're going to take that, we're going to edit it so that it's got a nice intro and close, much nicer than what you hear here on the Branding Blog Podcast. In fact, I've got some samples that we're going to be putting up towards the end of the week. So you get a nice intro and close on your podcast done with a professional radio announcer interviewing you about the topics that you choose. So no 60-minute style ambush interviews. This is friendly. Our entire goal is to make you look good, make you shine. And then we take that interview and we send it off, get it transcribed, and we post that along with the podcast as the content on your blog. So it becomes a blog post / podcast with the audio and the text. And it gets posted by our staff, not you. So you don't have to worry about the technical side. You have to get a decent microphone, and you have to set aside enough time every month to sit down and do one session, one recording session, so that we can turn that into a weekly blog post and podcast. And all of that for under $600 a month. You couldn't ghostwrite it for that and actually do it in a way that was effective use of your time. So take a look, shortcutblogging.com. We are slowly taking on new clients, but you can get yourself on the short list by going to shortcutblogging.com and just putting your name, or actually you don't even need your name, just your email address in the box, and we will be in touch when we are ready to take you on as a client. So there you go. That's our sponsor, Dennis Collins from, I can never even remember the call letters of your stations, Dennis, because I'm not a Miami guy.
Well, gee, now that I'm retired, I can't either. I mean, it's been too. Yeah. No, actually, I do.
Now that you're retired, it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, I have a very fond spot in my heart for WLYF.
WLYF.
Light FM, 101.5. Light FM. That's our AC station, Adult Contemporary. Magic. WMXJ, Magic 102.7, that's our classic hits. Mm-hmm. We used to call that oldies, but now it's classic hits.
Classic hits, sure.
And the station that I've had a lot of fun with for the last 3 or 4 years is 790 The Ticket, WAXY, Waxy AM, 790 The Ticket. So those were my three babies for, 30 years, Dave.
Yeah, because you wrenched the heat away from those guys across the street, right?
From the evil empire. Uh-huh. We were able to grab the heat just after the season started last year. And obviously, what a great season. They got all the way to the final game and just couldn't do it. But what a fun season, a great ratings season. Speaking again from the business viewpoint, it was wonderful for our ratings, obviously for our revenues. So it was great for our listeners, great for our clients, and it was great for the community. So that was fun.
Now, you've been in up to the point where you retired. How long were you in broadcasting, Dennis?
Only 42 years.
Only 42 years.
Yeah, I couldn't find a real job, Dave.
Uh-huh. Well, that's I feel your pain. I've I was there for a while. Nothing near the levels you attained, but and so how long in Miami?
30.
30 of those 42.
Yeah, I just crossed 30 years, and then I said, that's enough. It's time to hang up the rate cards and put the briefcase in the closet.
Now, on the Branding Blog podcast, because I have a family audience, and I try to, I told iTunes that it was, there's no – It's family-friendly content, right? It's not.
Yeah, just kind of like we are on radio.
I try to keep the profanity somewhat at bay. But for 30 years in Miami with those three stations, right?
Three stations.
You kicked ass and took names. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it's fair. But what's even more fair is that, you don't stay in one place as the general manager for 30 years without a lot of help.
Sure.
And I was very fortunate to have around me some of the best broadcast professionals, some of the best radio professionals in the country. And they stayed. We actually got them, radio people are like gypsies, 2 years here, 3 years there. I actually had people that have been with me almost the whole time that I was there.
Now, that is unheard of in radio.
Unheard of.
And I think what that speaks volumes about is your particular style of management. Your temperament, your ability to work with people and train them and bring them along.
I appreciate that. That's important to me. I happen to think radio is almost a pure people business. I mean, you can buy transmitters and control panels and microphones and CDs, but you know what? It's the people that make the difference. The people that are behind the scenes producing the great radio, the people who sell to our clients, who represent us out to the advertising community. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the people who make it happen. And I was blessed, Dave. I mean, I was blessed with some magnificent people who made themselves look real good and at the same time made me look good and enabled me to hang in for three decades.
Well, I think that's part of it, isn't it? I mean, that's what everybody says. Hire people that are smarter than you. Hire people that are better than you. And turn them loose and let them do what they do best.
You bet. And that if there was a philosophy that I tried to have in running the business, it was that each person brought something to the game or they wouldn't be there, and let them shine. Let their light shine and let them do what they do, obviously within the confines of what we do as a business, but let them shine and let them be the best they can be, whether it be pleasing our listeners or wowing our customers. I mean, whatever your position is, do it and do it well, and the rest follows. And we were very fortunate to be very successful over many years.
So, Dennis, one of the things that in a lot of the business owners that I've talked to, I've tried to drive home to them, and I'm asking you this because you've got way more experience than I have in being that person at the top that's doing the hiring and the firing. And so one of the maxims that I hear a lot, and when I see it in action, I go, yep, that's the way to do it. And maybe you can give me some examples of this, is the maxim of hire slowly and fire fast. Hire slow, fire fast. Meaning take your time and find the right person, the right fit for the job. But if somebody's not working out, and they're probably never going to work out, getting rid of them, fast. Get them on to where they can find something that's going to work for them. Is that something that you've found to be true over the years?
One of the jokes during my administration was that it took forever to get hired. I mean, you could go to the stations today and ask some of the people who are still there that I had a part in hiring, and they'd say, my gosh, it took forever to get on this team. And how long is forever? Oh, sometimes it took months. I mean, we'd have multiple interviews. I would never trust just one interview. I would have other people. If I was doing the hiring, I'd have two or three other people, managers that work for me, also interview the candidate. And they may not be the manager that they would be working for. It could be another discipline. I wanted different points of view on people. I wanted to check their backgrounds. I'm a big believer in past performance predicts future performance. So I would require people that came to work for me to prove that they actually could do what they said they could do. You'd be surprised how many people aren't prepared to do that. And they had to go back and prove that to me, or they couldn't get to step two.
Was part of your hiring process actually putting them in a situation and having them do what it is you were hiring to do before you hired them?
I am a huge believer in role plays. I've trained salespeople, as you know, for decades. And the key component to most of the training that I've done is having them watch one, observe one, and do one. See one, do one, and then teach one. I have like a three-tiered training philosophy. Let me show you how to do it. Now I want you to do it, and then I want you to teach someone else to do it. And by that point, you pretty much have learned it. So in an interview, Dave, I would require people to go through a drill. I would test them and say, okay, here's a scenario. You're a manager, you're working for me, and here's a case that presents itself. Talk to me about what you would do. In fact, I might even play the role of another person and start throwing lines to them to have them respond with lines to show me how they would respond to that problem. I happen to believe that's one of the only ways you can find out what somebody's all about is to put them to the test. Have them do what they're supposed to do and see how they do it.
And so that's how you would do it in a sales environment. And I think that holds true in just about any kind of a hire.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I hired program directors over the years. I hired chief engineers, technical people. Now, clearly, I'm not qualified to put a chief engineer through a technical drill. But what I would do is bone up on the things that I need them to do for me and test them to see how they would respond to various situations.
No. I tell you how you do it.
How's that?
You just throw them in the car and you drive them out to the transmitter site. Right? And you open the back door of the transmitter and you throw a brick in it as hard as you can.
Good.
And you see if the guy can fix it.
Dave, I never tried that. But that would be effective, wouldn't it?
That's probably how...
It might cost me my FCC license, but, intentionally...
I wouldn't do it to the one that's on the air.
Oh, okay.
You guys have backup, standby transmitters.
We're in hurricane land down here. We have backups to the backups to the backups.
Well, see, in my radio career was in Podunk, where we had no backup. There's no standby transmitter. We were lucky to have a standby microphone.
we have to have redundant everything. I mean, that's one of the lessons learned that might apply to some of your small business owners. What's your contingency? What I did is scenario planning with my management team. We would sit there and postulate what's the worst thing that can happen to our business.
Well, and you're sitting there in Hurricane Alley.
Yeah.
So the worst is always pretty bad.
But. Yeah, that's an obvious one. Here are some other scenarios. If you watch the news at all or are aware of what's going on, how many times do police have to come in and cordon off an area because of some catastrophe? And what if you can't get to your facility? And all of our transmission facilities, our studios, mm-hmm. all of our transmission facilities are located in one particular building for all three stations. What if we can't physically get there for some reason? Is it likely to happen? It could. We had a station in our group in Atlanta that had a bomb scare in their building. They had to evacuate the building. How do you operate the radio station?
That's a good question.
And these are the kind of scenario plans that we went through with the management team. Okay, and every business is different. But what is the worst thing that can happen to your business? And then what's the next worst thing? And then what's the next worst thing? And maybe list five, six, sometimes as many as 10 scenarios that can damage your business.
And so if you do that, if you pick, the 5 or 10 scenarios that have a wide enough differences in them, you'll probably have some overlap and ways sure. that the ones that you didn't anticipate, you at least thought of certain parts of them.
Yeah.
That you can pull together from that.
It's a great exercise. I highly recommend it for anybody who's in business to, you know, not that we should be looking always at the negative, not always, but you've got to spend at least a minute saying, okay, what are the biggest threats to my business?
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of strategic planning over the 30 years that, you know, which is kind of unusual for radio. Radio is not known for its strategic planning, but I forced my management team to create strategic plans. And, you know, it's the old traditional strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. You start there. And we got much more sophisticated. But, you know, once a year, does it hurt to sit down with some of your key people and say, okay, what do we do best? What are we mm-hmm. known for? And what do we do the worst? I mean, what do we suck at? I mean, what are we really bad at? And what opportunities are out there that we're not looking at, that maybe we're not focused on? And what's the biggest threat to this business? I mean, is it external or internal? Sometimes it's internal. We found that out in more than one case over the 3 decades that I've been here, that sometimes our biggest threat was right inside our own building.
Give me an example of that.
Wrong people.
Okay.
Wrong policies, improper, well, maybe not improper, that sounds bad, but I mean, just not maximizing a situation where it's right there in front of us and we're not seeing it. So, you know, we're blind to the obvious.
Did you ever bring outsiders in to help you see some of those things? Because sometimes you Absolutely. Can't see them when you're living inside the bottle. You can't read the label from the inside.
Many times, Dave, that's a very good point. I did not rely on our objectivity. You're absolutely right. I started way back in the mid-80s. I brought in a series of people. I probably, by the time I finished here, probably had maybe a dozen different people who I felt were deep thinkers, people who – they didn't know anything about the radio business. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I was glad. I didn't want people who were radio people. I wanted thinkers. I wanted strategic thinkers to come in and say, here is how you think. And they taught us how to think. They taught us, for instance, about Edward de Bono, lateral thinking. That mm-hmm. was one of the biggest breakthroughs we ever had when a guy came in and introduced our whole management team to the lateral thinking principles of Ed de Bono, the 6 thinking hats, all the lateral thinking tools that he created. And we actually employed those in our business, that when we had a tough decision to make, we would put on the 6 hats. And, you know, we would discuss the white hat, which is facts only. And you couldn't bring anything else up except facts. And then we'd talk about the red hat, which was emotions. How do we feel about this?
Mm.
And then we'd talk about the black hat. What are the reasons we shouldn't do this? And then we'd talk about the green hat. What are the positives? What are the reasons we should do this? So, I mean, we'd go through this discipline on all critical decisions. And that was brought in by an outside consultant that we hired that taught us the principles that Ed de Bono has been teaching for decades. Very valuable decision-making lessons.
And not broadcast-centric, so you're bringing in the view of an outsider.
Yeah, I don't think there can, you know, not that this is really important, but I can't imagine there are very many radio stations who are using Edward de Bono as the model for decision-making. And I think that enhanced our ability to put out great products and to market them in an exemplary way, in a very excellent fashion.
So you touched on when you were talking about the SWOT, the T yeah. for the threats, getting rid of, you know, that sometimes that's a personnel change. And so back to that idea of hiring slow, firing fast, when sure. that kind of a threat is identified, quick to act. I mean, is that what business owners need to
yeah,
do?
Yeah, and you know, Dave, let me caution, you know, and I know anybody who owns a business knows this. Obviously, there are a lot of rules and regulations these days that we all as business operators and owners have to follow. So, you know, it's not like the old day where the boss walks in and you're fired. You know, that that doesn't work. There are legal issues. There are all types of issues. And I caution any business owner, obviously, to get their legal advice and to make sure they are clear on what it is they're doing. But mm-hmm. yeah, once you determine that this person is a threat to your operation, you got to take them out.
I mean,
and you're actually doing them a favor and yourself a favor, but
sure.
I mean, they don't see it that way. But.
I've talked to business owners. They're like, oh, you know, I got this guy, he's in my sales department, and he comes, I'm hoping that he's going to come along. You know, he doesn't do what we tell him to do. He likes to do things his own way. And, you know, and then you talk to him 6 months or a year later, like, so how are things going? Well, you know, he's still not coming. And you think, gosh, why didn't you just fire him? Why don't you do both of you a favor?
That's a great question. You know, Dave, and I fall into that sometimes. I believe in people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I believe in people too long. And that has hurt me. I'm going to be honest about it. I have believed that I believe that people will rise to the occasion. Well, guess what? There are some people who can't rise to the occasion. They don't have the skill.
Yeah.
Or they don't have the motivation.
Well, that's just it. It's usually a matter of fit.
Yeah.
It's usually a matter of the job requires strengths that they don't have.
Right.
And so you're asking them to do something that they really just don't have the chops to do. And so it's frustrating for you and it's frustrating for them. And if you don't have a position that can utilize their strengths, they're eventually going to be happier somewhere else. And you're going to be happier
Absolutely.
With somebody that has the strengths for that job. And it's tough. Gosh, it's tough as a business owner. I've been
sure
in that
is.
Situation where you go, oh, you know, but gosh, this person, she's got kids and she's got
yeah.
These obligations. And oh my gosh, you know, you just, you can work yourself into just a wreck, putting that emotional hat on.
Oh, it's terrible. It's gut wrenching. But you know, if you're the owner or the manager, you're responsible for the entire enterprise, not just one person's well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to remember that as you discharge your duties. You know, and you have to get comfortable with eliminating the things in your business that are getting in the way of success, of mm-hmm. clarity, of focus. And that's one of the toughest things that as an owner or manager that you have to do. And many people never come to grips with that. It's sad, but true. You've seen it. I've seen it. You know, one of the cool things about being in the radio business is that we have clients from almost every discipline that you can imagine. I mean, so I've got to meet over my four decades in the business, people from every kind of business, from big businesses, small businesses, mom and pops, giant corporations, large ad agencies. I've really had a chance to study
sure.
All different types of businesses. And guess what? There are some common denominators to every business. And one of them is the people. How long do you keep poor performers? Where do you find great performers? That's the other issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we hesitate to take out the poor performers because we don't have anybody better to put in there. So it's the devil you know. I know that sounds, I mean, that sounds stupid, but that is a reality. That if we take Joe Smith out, he deserves to be out. Who are we going to replace him with?
Yeah, and especially if you've got existing staff that have to kind of fill in and pick
right.
up extra load. But,
right.
you know, the reality of it is most of the staff that are working alongside the poor performer, they know it.
Oh.
They know
and you
it,
know what?
And they're glad
yep.
to pick up the weight.
And they're judging you, the manager or the owner. That is the standard. I don't care what you go into the sales meeting or the management meeting or the staff meeting and say, this is the standard. This is what you have to do to be in good standing here. This is what we expect. And so on and so forth. And then you allow poor performers to stay on. Guess what? What you said is irrelevant.
That's right.
It's what you do, not what you say. That's one thing you learn in Management 101.
You know, one of the things that I've kind of enjoyed over the last 3 or 4 years, there have been some reality shows that focus on business that I think
right.
always have some kind of fun management lessons in them, especially for small business. One that comes to mind is Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Makeovers. Have you ever watched any of those episodes?
I have. Yes, I have.
You know, where he comes in, they bring him in as an outsider, and he cuts right to the bone. You know,
yep.
I mean, right to the bone, and you know, doesn't spare any four-letter words, but he can quickly identify here. This is that person right there is your problem. He's holding the entire place back. Get rid of him. Put somebody good in there. You're in business. You're good to go. Sometimes it's the owner.
Oh, I remember several episodes where it was indeed the owner.
And, yeah.
You know, I call it the cold, hard light of objectivity. And one of the biggest pet peeves that I've had with my own business, as well as clients that we've tried to help, is that people don't want to look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about you, but when I get up in the morning, that's not the most pleasant view. The first look in the mirror is not a favorable look. As a rule.
Hey, there's that old saying, we've got great faces for radio, right?
That's true. Some of us, yeah, that look doesn't improve even after shaving and showering. But point being, what I've tried to do over my decades in this industry is say, look in the mirror. What is reality? I'm not interested in hearing what you think reality is. We need to deal with what it is. Mm-hmm. Once we get to what it is, then we can talk about what could be. And that was a big part of our strategic planning. We used to write big, thick books full of strategic plans. And the starting point is, where are we right now? Yeah. Where are we? It's just like the GPS system that we have now in our cars, the navigational system. It has to know where you are to get you to where you're going to go. Mm-hmm. And I strongly advise business owners and managers, find out where you are and take the varnish off of it, take the polish off of it. Where are you? Be honest, be transparent, and recognize what your situation is. And I have found that to be a big problem in business.
I think that's absolutely true. And you know, when you do those strategic plans, if you're not doing it from a base of reality, you know, it's a waste of time anyway. You know, in when I was managing in my little station, if we based our contingency plans on having a backup transmitter when we didn't have one, you know, that's the kind of plan that wouldn't work for us, because when something happened, it'd be, oh well, we based this plan on rainbows and unicorns, and we don't have any of those.
Let's go turn on our emergency transmitter. Whoops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't have. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, be reality based. Look at reality the way it is, not the way you'd like it to be. And that's where the De Bono white hat, for those who might be familiar, that's what's called the factual hat.
Yeah.
And when you're wearing the white hat, no one in the group can speak about anything but facts. And I mean real facts. They have to be proven, undeniable facts. And during that segment of the discussion, that's all you talk about. And that's where you get to the objectivity, you know, that you know, what are we? Well, who are we? What are we? And that's where the facts come in. And put on the white hat and get fact-based before you can move forward and make progress.
Sounds like great advice. So the show that I've been watching lately, Dennis, that I think has some really interesting management lessons is a show called Sons of Guns. Have you heard of that? Uh-huh.
I have not.
Uh-uh. And I'm watching it on Netflix. I'm not sure even what network it's on, but it's about this little custom firearms company down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Uh-huh. And the guy that owns it is a former Marine, and he's got a staff of three or four gunsmiths, and his daughter kind of runs the front office. And he's a fascinating study in leadership and management. To see how he decides what direction they're going to go, to see how he hires, how he fires, it's really interesting. He's a very strong personality, and I think it's one of those shows. It's very much like Gordon Ramsay in that you've got this just strong. I don't know. I mean, he's an ex-Marine, so it's probably safe to call him an alpha dog type manager.
No doubt.
And so some of it you go, oh, wow, you know, it's he's leading with his head, but then he also knows when to lead with his heart. So it's really an interesting study. And I think you'd enjoy it, just because I know you and I have we have kind of a shared interest. We've gone shooting and done things like that. I think you'd really enjoy the show personally.
I'll have to look it up.
From that standpoint too.
Sure.
So as I said at the beginning of the show, Any lessons for business owners? I mean, in your time in broadcasting, you, as you said, you have talked to business owners from big, big corporations all the way down to the mom and pops, you know, the one guy in a phone size business. And of course, in broadcasting, you're for the most part, your interactions with people is trying to sell them good advertising and marketing advice so that you can help them grow their business. And yet, very often people are resistant to that because, especially when it's when that advice is coming from someone that's who's got a product or service to sell along with it, they tend to just see the fact that you're trying to sell them something so that you can make a buck.
Yeah.
But of the advice that you give these business owners, can you think of anything that, that they consistently just kind of ignore that, that you know in your heart is something that, that's just the mistake that's holding them back? I mean, does anything just pop in mind?
Well, that's the subject of my next book.
but, good. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, but here's there's an author that I read the other day that, that said it better than I have. I think his name is Bill Jensen. And he has a comment in one of his books. What's the biggest distance in the world? It's the distance between I know and I do. And that just struck me as I've been researching this and working on this for decades. Why is it that we know something or we say we know something and yet we don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to point to one thing that I've noticed in my own business, I'm indicting myself also, as well as my clients' businesses, we don't do what we know. And you know what I have found, Dave? Most people do know what to do. Most people have a good sense, either an instinct or have studied or both, and they have an idea of what needs to be done, but somehow most people don't do it.
Right.
And it has to do with habit. It has to do with comfort zone. It has to do with tomorrow. No, not today, tomorrow. It has to do with I don't have time. And I would suggest that if you don't have time now, you may need to take time later, because there are certain things that have to be done in any business that are the foundation of business. And if you skip them or if you do them sloppy, you're going to go under. And so I have tried in my practice with my clients and in my business to get the doing more active than just the knowing. And my staff would tell you this. I say it to them all the time. In business, knowing something without action is useless. It's stupid. Why have the knowledge if you don't put it into action?
Good point.
And the only thing that makes a difference in business is action. You know, business is about results. Business is about outcomes. It's not about philosophies. Those can drive a business. It's not about purpose. That's important to organize a business around a purpose. But at the end of the day, if it's a successful business, it's about outcomes. And most of those outcomes are financial outcomes. And if you're not taking the action to get to the right financial outcomes, you're not going to have a business. So that's the one. There are many other things that, that come to my mind. But if I had to hit one, that would be it. Do the thing that you know to do. Do it.
And the thing is, everybody knows that thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's usually the thing that we stare in the face can't find the gumption to do or can't find the courage to do, but we know we should do.
And, you know, we end up making excuses. Well, we don't have enough time. We don't have enough people. We don't have this. We don't have that. And that's the other thing that I declared war on in my business many, many years ago. It's the no excuse zone. Do not come to me and after a failure and make excuses. Take accountability. Take responsibility for outcomes. And if you didn't get the right outcome, tell me what you're going to do to get it. I know people are going to fail. It's okay. If you learn something, if you didn't learn anything from the failure, not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around and fix it and do it again and tweak it, change it, modify it, and get the outcome that we need. I mean, no one's perfect. No one has the answer. You know, that's the other thing. Someone recently told me this story. Like, if you were a scientist And you were in the laboratory all day trying to create something that has never been created, a chemical compound or reaction or a new product. And you would go through many iterations called experiments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are probably going to fail from what we know of scientists, right?
Sure.
They're not going to give you the outcome that you thought about. Do we consider that scientist to be a failure because they did an experiment that didn't work? Generally not. So why can't we apply that word experiment to business and say, you know, no one is perfect, but if you don't try anything and if you don't continue to tweak and try and change, you're not going to find the right answer. And yet there's a fear of, oh, God, we have to have the right answer the first time. Let me know how that works out for you.
Well, I think it was – I'll paraphrase a quote from Thomas Edison. You know, I mean, he
right.
A thousand different light bulbs before he got one that worked. And somebody asked him about all those failures. He said, I don't consider them failures. I learned 1,000 ways not to build a light bulb.
There you go. And we all know that story.
Yeah.
That's exactly my point. We all know that story. We've used it. We've repeated it. We've taught with it. And yet, in our own businesses, we don't do it.
We let that fear of failing
right.
keep us from even trying.
Or we punish the messenger. You know, the person who went out and tried something and it wasn't exactly right, we punish them instead of rewarding them. And I know this is, words are cheap, and you know, I can't tell you that I am the epitome or the model of this because I'm not. But I realize it, and I've seen it in other businesses, and I happen to think it's one of the things that's holding us back.
Well said. Well, Dennis, before we go, I know that you've got you know, a lifetime of experience to share with people. And yet you've retired from your full-time gig in radio management.
Right.
And I know just from working with you that you've got lots of things in the works. You're going to be doing some consulting work.
Sure.
You've got educational things for people, lessons to be learned, and you've got a lot of contacts you're going to be talking with and generating content. And I also know that you know, in talking with you beforehand here, that you don't have a website quite ready yet, but you
not
will
yet.
Soon.
Sure.
So if somebody's interested in a good sales management consultant, you're willing to talk to them, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love doing it. It's my passion. For whatever time I have left in this wonderful world, I want to help particularly sales managers. Those sales managers, Dave, are probably in the toughest jobs in all of business. They're sandwiched in between upper management and ownership. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the sales staff. And the pressure comes from clients, from their staff, and from above. I respect sales managers. I was one for a period of time. I managed sales managers for decades. And I got to tell you, I want to spend the rest of my time helping sales managers be the best they can be. And I don't know too many people who do that. Most of the sales stuff that I've seen out there is geared towards sales person training. Getting mm-hmm. your sales staff trained. I want to work with the sales managers and say, guys, gals, you have a tough job. I know how tough it is. I've been there, and I've also been that guy that was over you. Let me share with you the stuff that I learned.
So,
and like, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, so if you're a sales manager and you're listening to us and know that you could use some help, some guidance,
right.
We can get you in touch with Dennis. And also, if you own a business and you have a sales manager that you know is struggling, that you know could use a little bit of insight from somebody who's been there, done it, you could help with that as well, right? I mean,
a business
owner could put you in touch with a sales manager and
And, you know, I realize that business owners have become reluctant accidental sales managers.
Yeah.
A business owner oftentimes had the idea. They're the entrepreneur. They had the notion, whatever it is, to form this business. They had the product. They had the guts to do it. And all of a sudden, because it is a small business, they are forced into being the salesperson, the sales manager, and that's not the role that they're comfortable with. And yet they have to do it. This information that I'm going to be putting together is for them too. That if you've been thrust into a sales management position accidentally because of the nature of your business, I can help. And I want to help because that's what I do. I have the most empathy in the world for people in that position. And luckily, I have some insights in what works and what doesn't work. Because first of all, I made all the mistakes at one time or another. And secondly, as a general manager, I've seen all the mistakes at least once and probably hundreds of times.
Sure. So, you know, when you've got a site and we're ready to do that, I want you to come back and we'll do another interview and talk about what it is exactly you have to offer. In the meantime, if somebody just wants to get in touch with you, fill out the contact form on brandingblog.com and I'll put you right in touch with Dennis. I'll give you his top secret cell phone number.
And
we'll get you directly through to him because he really can help. I mean, if I had a sales staff and you'd be the first guy I called, Dennis. You'd be the absolute first guy and couldn't recommend you strong enough to just about anybody that's trying to make things happen with a sales staff.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, congratulations on such a great career in broadcasting. And I'm so excited to see what the next chapter brings, because I know you've got some great material, some great things to offer as someone who's been there, done that, got the battle scars, and has come out successfully through to the other side. Did you get a gold watch? What are they giving
you? Isn't it funny that to a guy who no longer really observes the clock and, you know, they give you a watch? No, they didn't actually.
Oh, good.
They were very kind to me and gave me some wonderful travel and some other goodies. And, you know, I wasn't looking for anything, but it was very nice to get some nice things.
Well, it's great to see a good guy come out in great shape at the end. So
It's nice to be still standing and able to do it on my own terms in my own way. Boy, that's not always the case in business these
days.
And
you don't even have to move to Miami to retire. You're already there.
Hey, I'm already here, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Just change into your shorts and put the big sunglasses on and you're set.
My t-shirt and my shorts, man. That's a comfortable uniform.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dennis, for being a guest on Branding Blog Radio. Look forward to talking to you many, many times in the future.
I appreciate it, Dave. Thanks.
All right. We've been talking with Dennis Collins, good friend and now retired broadcast executive from Miami, Florida. Again, our podcast today is sponsored by ShortcutBlogging.com. If you know you ought to be blogging and you're not, go to ShortcutBlogging.com. Check it out. I'd love to invite you to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter. I don't Twitter a lot, but, you know, we can try. And the links are here on the blog. And if you have any questions, click on the contact link and ask away or leave a comment on the blog itself. And you can also subscribe in iTunes. So head to iTunes, look for Branding Blog Radio, and you'll find us there. And you can subscribe or leave a review if you'd like. And again, if you want to get in touch with Dennis Collins, click on my contact link and send me a message. I will connect you guys up right away. That's it for this week's edition of Branding Blog Radio. I'm Dave Young. Thanks for listening.